Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Campfire Stories, Volume 2. We have a family cabin in the middle of nowhere, on a small lake with two other cabins, surrounded by forested area and flatlands both. About 2 miles away from the cabin and across the dirt road is a wildlife reserve. As kids, we walk through there all the time. After about 30 minutes walking straight into these woods, there used to be a collection of abandoned houses. It was an old settlement. We went exploring and found that the people who used to live there had just up and left. In each house, there were still dishes on the table, clothing in the closets, cars parked in the clearings, all the strappings for horses in the barns. In one house, the floor had caved in, and there were about 40 pairs of women's shoes scattered around the hole in the middle. No bones, though, animal or human, nothing. We decided to stay away from the second floors of the house after we saw that, and we figured they'd be structurally unsound. A skeletal treehouse in the middle of the clearing. After we told my parents, my dad wanted to come and look too. In one of the houses, we found a bedroom, fully intact. The sheets were still on the beds. The pillow still had the indentation of a head on it, but everything was covered in a thick layer of dirt, and the dust on the floors only had our footprints in it. At the foot of the bed was this stunning, enormous gray fur coat. There were a few moth holes chewed in it, and it was as dirty as everything else, but when we inspected it, we knew it was real fur, likely wolf or silver fox. It was gorgeous. Dad decided he was going to bring it back and clean it up and see if he could have it remade for my mom. Dad was a thrifty guy. As we were leaving, I got a chill in the back of my neck, and about 60 yards from the house, turned around and saw an old woman glaring at us from the window of the second floor. She had her hair in a loose bun and was wearing a blue shawl on her shoulders over a cream-colored blouse. I immediately felt super guilty. I grabbed my dad, who was about 10 yards ahead of me, and told him we had better put the coat back, because the woman was still living there, and we had probably scared her, and she looked pissed. We turned back around, and I pointed to the window I saw her glaring at us from. No one there. I said she must have gone downstairs, and as we approached the house, still carrying the stupid coat, one of the windows in another house suddenly slammed shut. I effing ran as fast as I could into the woods. Dad, being Dad, stayed behind and started yelling for the lady to come out. He was sorry, etc. Went upstairs and no one was there. Dust on the floor and disturbed. Then he started up and dropped the coat in a big hurry, and we beat it back to the road as fast as we could. About 5 years later, the government demolished the whole thing. Story number 2. I've always been drawn to the wild. It seems like home, and I generally know my neighbors out there, not afraid to be in the deep woods in the dark. I love my woods. One sunny weekday afternoon, I had dirt bike up an old mining road. It gained a couple thousand feet from the valley floor towards one of the ridges of the Cascades. When the road gave out near the bottom of a high basin, I put on my backpack and started off cross-country towards the ridge. It was still heavily forested, old growth and old cut fading in another 1,000 feet into the scraggly windblown ones near the top. About 20 minutes in, about half a mile up from me, near the tree line, I heard this thumping sound. It was very odd, so I stopped to listen carefully. It sounded like a big solid branch was being whacked against a solid tree. I used the term solid because the hits were powerful. One or both of the pieces of wood were hard and dry. The wood resonated and rang on impact as dry wood will. I couldn't get over the power, though. It sounded like someone was swinging a 4-inch post. Weird, right? Well, it gets better. This someone sounded like they were trying to communicate. The thumping had a very complex and well-defined pattern. And here's the weirdest part. The thumping signal occasionally became very rapid, like what a drummer could do if they were noodling around with a stick, but I swear it sounded like a 4-inch post was being treated as lightly as a drumstick. I listened for maybe 5 minutes, just fascinated with the sound, this code, and the power of it. Then the drumming suddenly stopped, and I kind of woke up to the fear of this unknown thing out there. I had my pistol, I had my bear spray, and my knife. I really only fear cougars, and even then I figure they'll have a bad day trying to take me down. Still, the silence as I stared into the forest ahead seemed loaded, and I turned on my heels and left that valley. That place and that experience gave me the chills, and that high valley won't see my shadow again. I have heard stories about some of the native people around here having valleys that they just wouldn't go into. I can now easily understand how these legends get started. Story number 3. Camping in Wyoming, 2 hours from pretty much anywhere with my dad, my friend, and my dog. This dog was the calmest, albeit quite stupid, and nicest dog I've ever had. I've never heard her growl or bark at anything, no matter how much it presented a threat to us or her. She just assumed everything was her friend or food. It was late at night, my dad was asleep. My friend and I were just hanging around the campfire. Out of nowhere, the dog bolted up, barked once, and started growling in the direction of a field next to our site. Of course, we're freaking the F out, trying to figure out what the hell she's going on about, when we realized there's a group of shadows on the other side of the field. We just sat there staring at whatever it is when we heard a conversation. No clue what language it was in. This went on for about 10 minutes, and we're staring wide-eyed at the shadows. I didn't think to wake my dad, when the shadows just went away, and my dog stopped growling, laid down, and fell back asleep. This was the one and only time she ever did anything like that in over a decade that we had her. Until this day, it still freaks me out. Next story. Some friends and I were doing some night fishing on the James River. We were sitting along the shoreline with a nice fire going, accompanied by the usual idle talk and a few beers, when suddenly everyone just stopped talking like a switch was flipped off. We were all staring across the river and felt as if something or someone was staring back. It was a very uneasy feeling, to which some of the group tried to shake off with a typical macho humor, when a blood-curdling sound erupted from the other shore that froze everyone in their tracks. This sound was unlike any other that I had heard, and it made every hair on my body vibrate and tingle. The only way I can describe it is that it sounded like a wild person with no language skills being gutted alive. No words, just this high-pitched, blood-curdling scream. Nobody moved or said a word. We all just sat there, fixed in our stare, when just as suddenly a second scream was let loose with even more force than the first. By this time, several of us were sprinting to our trucks that were parked within 20 or 30 feet and retrieving various firearms. We all sat there quietly with our eyes fixed, staring toward the opposite shore, watching the light from our fire reflecting off the rocks. Hours later, we packed it up and left, feeling very unsettled. We never did figure out that one, or even hazard a guess as to what was on the opposite bank. Next story. Me and my eldest son took off to a lake in the wilds of Glacier Country. I have extensive background exposure, even did a stint as a big game guide in a remote backcountry camp. On this day, we enjoyed the fishing and settled in for the night. I pulled out my pan and stoked up a nice fire. It was clear and cool as the sun faded into the western slopes. We cooked up some fresh rainbow with garlic and butter and filled our stomachs. I leaned back against the cooler after pulling out a refreshing beverage. The boy was soon asleep by the fire, as it had been a busy day. I sipped my beer and watched the moonlight bouncing off the little waves in the lake. There was still a light glow on the western horizon where the sun had gone down, and I could see the outline of the mountain peaks towering over the little lake. I slowly faded off to sleep with the sound of the lake waves gently lapping on the rocks. I awoke with a start. The fire was out, the lantern was out too. The moon was gone. and it was pitch black. Something was wrong. The hair on the back of my neck stood straight out. I was paralyzed. I could hear my heart thumping as I strained to hear something in the bush. All was quiet. I had a horrible, uneasy feeling. I gathered myself together and started kicking around the fire. A small flame came alive, and I quickly threw on some wood. In the firelight, I could see that the boy had awoken and was shocked to see his wide open eyes staring at me. "What's wrong?" he asked. "Nothing. Go climb in the tent." I lied. He crawled into the tent, but even the light of fire, I couldn't shake my wariness. Something was out there in the bush, and I could feel it was watching me. I gathered up my light and flashed around camp. Nothing. Finally, I began to calm down and crawled in the tent with the boy. Then again, like clockwork, I woke completely tense. This time, I couldn't shake the feeling at all. I finally instructed the boy to wake up and go get in the truck. I packed up all of our camp stuff and drove around to the other side of the lake and slept with him in the truck. At dawn, I got up and looked across the lake where we had camped earlier, and another uneasy feeling came over me. I decided it was time to go home. I don't know what was out there or what was going on over there, but I know my instincts, and something was bad wrong with that place. Whatever it was, I will leave it to your imagination. It creeps me out to this day thinking about that night. Next story. It was very early in the morning, around 2 or 3 a.m., and I was in a very open area waiting for my boss to return with some equipment. As I was waiting, I got that feeling like I was being watched by something that didn't want me there and had some intent on harming me. I stood up and looked around. The moon was very bright that night, and I could clearly see all the way to the tree lines, probably 50 yards on both sides of me. Nothing around. I calmed down a bit and took my pack off my back to get my drink out. As I opened my drink, I heard this whoosh, whoosh, whoosh sound flying through the air from behind me. It was like the sound that a stick makes if you throw it overhead. I literally dove out of the way with my bag falling to the ground and my drink flying through the air spilling as I jumped away. I recovered from my diving experience and I took my radio out of my bag to radio my boss. I said, "I'm not trying to freak you out or anything, but I'm on my way back to the shop. I just had something thrown at me." As I'm talking to him, I'm looking around on the snowy ground for anything that could have been hurled at me. There was nothing on the ground but snow. I had no idea what the hell was going on at this point. His reply of, "I've already got a head start on you. I'll see you there," sounded like he was out of breath, like he had been running. I gathered my stuff and started hauling ass back to the shop. I got back and met up with my boss, and he's pacing back and forth in our shop, freaking out. Got him to calm down, and he tells me he was on his way back up to me when he got the same feeling I got before something got thrown at me. He said after that he got the feeling that he had to stop and look around because he heard something clearly, something two-legged start walking towards him, barely crunching the snow. Then he said it started running at him, but there was nothing in sight. All of the sounds of movement stopped, and he froze to listen for more sounds. Then he said a hot breath was hitting the back of his neck, and he proceeded to freak out. He said he ran the whole way back to the shop, and about halfway back is when he heard me on the radio. The crazy part about this whole thing is the area where we were working has several burial mounds in the woods from Native Americans. Apparently, there also used to be an altar of some kind made out of stone that was buried during a construction project a few decades ago. Next story. I moved into my place about 6 years ago. Almost from day one, I've had some rather unusual experiences. From friends who asked about figures looking out of a window and sitting on my balcony, to the sound of footsteps walking up and down the hallway late at night, the place has generally been a classic haunted house. There are three experiences that stand out all over the general creepiness. The first occurred about a year after I moved in. The house was empty except for myself. I was relaxing with a book when I heard the sound of footsteps in the hallway. I put the book down and waited. The footsteps came to my bedroom door and ceased. A minute went by without any further occurrence, so I picked up my book. As I began to read, I heard a soft knock on the door. I set the book down again and asked who was at the door. Silence. Then I heard another knock. Again, I asked who was at the door. Again, there was no answer. I started to get up when I heard a female voice call my name. The voice came from the hallway and was loud enough to be heard through the door. I did not recognize the voice. The voice also sounded strange, as though it were an echo. I went to the door and opened it. No one was in the hallway, and after a search, the house was empty. The second occurred about 4 months after that first. It was late in the afternoon, and I was working on my computer when I heard a knock on my bedroom door. I stood up, went to the door, only to find there was no one there. I went back to my work when I heard the knocking again. This time it was louder. This time I called out that I wasn't going to be toyed with, and that if they wanted my attention, they would have to do more than tap and make funny noises. I had only finished this statement when I heard a crash from my closet. I stood up and went to check. Sitting on the floor was a picture frame I had put on the top shelf, about 7 feet off the floor. The glass was not cracked, and the frame had no scratches or dings, as one expected after falling that far. I took the frame and replaced it on the shelf, adding a heavy book to keep it there. Minutes later, I heard another bang from the closet. The same picture frame had fallen again. The glass was not broken, and the book remained on the shelf. I spoke up and said that I felt it was rude to throw another person's possessions around without permission. Nothing further occurred that day. The last occurred about a year ago. It was a Saturday night, and I had turned in early after a hectic day. I woke up suddenly in the middle of the night with a distinct feeling that I was not alone. I opened my eyes and saw a dark figure at the foot of the bed. It seemed to stare at me for a long time before leaning closer. I spoke up and said that I had no business being in my room, and I wanted to leave. It seemed to hover in place before withdrawing and fading into the shadows. Next story. When I was about 5 or 6 years old, my brother, sister, mother, and I lived in an old house in Umatilla, Florida, which is north of Eustis. The house was the old traditional wood frame style of the mid to late 1800s, complete with gabled roof and corresponding upstairs ceilings. It also had a porch on the front, the side, and the rear. My father was away on one of his extended ventures that lasted from a month to several, somewhere that didn't afford the likes of food, clothing, and rent money for starving wife and children. I think the house was donated by people that cared for us more than my father. In any case, we had little more than wire spring mattress frames to sleep on and did well to eat ripe oranges from the orange groves that once covered the area. It must have been early in the season for fruit, for I remember eating some oranges and tangerines that were still a little green. I mention these details not for pity, but to set the stage of our living conditions at that time. When evening came, we would all huddle together in the living room that was downstairs near the rear of the house. Connected to the rear of the living room was the kitchen, and there was the door to the back porch. I was young, but still remember my mother and the others talking about that back door, which had several sturdy locks. Beyond the door was the back porch that went down the width of the back of the house, then continued on the side of the house towards the front. The porch was constructed of wood boards, as was the rest of the house. So when someone walked down the porch, you had no trouble hearing it all through the kitchen and living room. If the reason for all those locks in the back door wasn't evident when we first moved in, it became crystal clear a short time thereafter. For every evening, just after sundown, what sounded like a man with cowboy boots could be heard walking down that porch on the side of the house, then turning and continuing to the back door. The knob would then actually turn several times before the visitor left. This went on almost every evening. One day, my oldest brother, David, who was about 15 at the time, borrowed a .22 rifle, and climbed into the huge old live oak tree in the backyard. When the time came, we could all hear the footsteps walking down the porch and see the knob turning. But my brother, who had an excellent view of the situation, saw nothing or no one on the porch. After that, we all made sure to be inside before evening and waited out the time for the visitor cowboy to come and go. Many years passed. My brother's sister and I decided to go back to the house, if it was still there, and see what became of it. We made a trip to Florida. We all live in Alabama now, and returned to that home site. We found that the old house was still there, but was now completely surrounded by a fence that was 8 feet tall and full of trees and bushes. It was quite evident that the owners wanted their privacy. We called out and blew the car horn until finally a woman came to the gate. She was hesitant to talk at all, especially concerning something in the nature of the paranormal, but finally she dropped her defenses enough to talk more openly. She said there had never been any disturbance at the back door, but that strange things happened on a regular basis in their kitchen. When we finally got her to reveal more about the layout of her home, it became evident that they had renovated the home years earlier, and what was the back door for us was now her kitchen. As it turned out, the old cowboy had finally gotten in and was now making himself at home in the kitchen. Next story. My wife and I moved into a house built in 1969 in Phoenix, Arizona. The original owner and her daughter both died while living there, not necessarily in the house, but while they were residents. For the first 3 years, we never really noticed anything but shadows passing a doorway or that type of thing. We had never acknowledged it, even to each other at the time. Most of the activity was noticed by me while sitting on the toilet at the end of the hall. A shadow would pass across the doorway like it was going into my bedroom. It never really bothered me because it somehow seemed like a cat or a dog. I checked quite a few times to see if my cat had gotten in and always found my cat outside. In 2004, we had twins, a boy and a girl. Around the end of the first year, we would notice that the babies, while sitting in their high chairs being fed, would look into the family room, leaning to either side to see past where was feeding them and point, laugh, and giggle between themselves at whatever they were seeing. Something or someone which no one else ever saw. During that time, I had gone out of town, and previous to that, my wife's birthday, we had gotten her a German chocolate cake, which, due to health reasons, she had to wait to eat. There was one piece left when I went away. It had one of those snap-on plastic lids in the store-bought cakes come in. She had debated on whether to eat the cake one afternoon, and went as far as going to do it with the intent of eating it. But due to her Crohn's, she decided to wait till the next day. Going back the following day after putting the babies in the crib, she went to remove the lid and noticed that the icing, her favorite part, had all been scraped off the top of the cake. It had been there the day before intact, and the babies were not walking. No one had visited from one day to the next. About 2 months later, my sister was babysitting for us and was feeding the twins in their chairs while talking to my wife, who had called to check in. My sister had gone to the sink to get a washcloth with warm water to wash her other kids. She walked back, washed the first kid off, and turned to walk back to the sink, and she just stopped talking. My wife asked what was wrong, and my sister said the cupboard under the sink was wide open on the right side. My wife handed me the phone. My sister told me what happened. I told her maybe the cat had gotten in the cupboard and she scared it out, but I knew better. She closed it, making sure the child latch caught, and went to wash the other kid's face off. When she turned around, the cabinet door was wide open again. She took the kids to my mom's for the rest of the weekend. I had a lot of shadow sightings, bumps in the other rooms, things not where we left them. That happened for the next 9 years. Last week, I was in the bathroom at the end of the hall. I was getting ready to go out. My toothbrush was in the kitchen. I was talking to my girlfriend. Yeah, I divorced 2 years ago. As I got my toothbrush and went back to the hall bath, only to find the cabinet door under the sink wide open, in spite of the childproof latches. We call her Barb, as that was the name of the lady who lived here. She'd never been overly mean, more of just letting us know she's still here kind of thing. One thing I noticed recently again is that me and my youngest daughter always seem to wake up between 3:10 and 3:17 on most nights, but we have absolutely no idea why. Next story. I grew up in a house in an area described as rural residential. It wasn't a subdivision, but there were plenty of houses in the neighborhood. And best of all, there were about 14 other boys in the neighborhood, all about the same age as me and my brother. Suffice to say that it was a great place to grow up during the early 1970s. Anyway, nothing strange happened there when I was young. But when I was in my late teens, my parents started talking about the little girl that they had seen going from room to room. She would come out of one room, go down the hall, and then into another room. I blew this off as my parents were getting older now and maybe just seeing things. One Christmas Eve, my brother and his family were sitting there and he heard his 3-year-old daughter talking in the bedroom. He went in and asked her who she was talking to, and she said, "My little friend." When he asked her where her little friend was, she said, she went into the bookcase. This kind of freaked my brother out a bit. Later that evening, my parents and my brother and his wife were in the kitchen talking after my niece had gone to bed. They were getting ready to set up Santa Claus when my brother thought he saw his daughter peeking around the door into the kitchen. When he turned around to shoo her back to bed, he realized that it wasn't his daughter, but the little girl that my parents had been seeing. He described it to a T. About 6 or 7 years old, with light brown hair that came straight down and covered one eye. She wore what seemed like a white nightgown of some kind, and oh yes, she faded out at about mid-thigh. When he looked at her, she looked up at him and then turned and went down the hall and disappeared. Weird things about this is that my sisters were the only girls to have lived in that house. My parents bought it from the builder, and he didn't have any kids, so she couldn't have lived or died in that house. There was no logical reason for that little girl to have been there. She never did anything like move stuff around or make noises. She just went from room to room. Several other people have seen her, my cousin and my ex included. I myself have never seen her. My parents moved out of that house 20-odd years ago, and I wondered where that little girl is now. I drove past the house a few months ago. It was vacant, so I stopped to check it out. According to the placards on the front door, the house had been abandoned since 2011. Apparently, some company had winterized the house for the mortgage company and had been locked down since then. When I looked in the front window, a million wonderful memories came back to me, stuff that I hadn't thought about in years. I also noticed that the louvered door to the furnace closet at the end of the hall was closed. That was the spot my brother had seen the little girl 3 decades ago. I almost expected to see her come down the hall and into sight, but she didn't. About a week later, I was in that neighborhood again and stopped by. When I looked in the front window, I could see that the louvered door to the furnace closet was now open. Next story. A couple of years ago, the house my sister was living in became something of a problem. They would hear footsteps from the floor above when they knew that no one was up there. They would see shadow forms out of the corner of their eyes, and they would constantly have the strong feeling of dread no matter what room of the house they were in. This creepy feeling actually increased over time as the happenings became much more frequent and much more ominous. Ghostly knocking and voices became the norm. Literally, it was a daily occurrence. The shadows became more defined and would literally sit in a dark corner and watch a room's occupant for extended periods of time. They began to avoid parts of the house where activity seemed to pick up in intensity when they were in it. Then there were 2 very strange and terrifying occurrences that really shook us up. The first thing happened to my brother one night when he went to stay. He decided to sleep on the couch instead of the guest room, since the living room had become something of a hot spot in recent times. He awoke suddenly in the middle of the night and became aware of a black figure in the room that was darker than the night around it. It paced the room soundlessly for a short period of time, then it seemed to crawl up a wall and melt into the ceiling above. The area, when he examined it in the morning, was approximately where our sister's room was, one floor above. The second happened a few weeks later. My sister was asleep in her bed when she felt the mattress shift and sink, as if someone had sat down beside her. She sat up and began to say the Lord's Prayer while she reached for a small bottle of holy water she had purchased. She daubed the four corners of the bed and commanded the spirit to leave her in peace. What happened next terrified her so much she called both my brother and I in the middle of the night. As she commanded the spirit to depart, she suddenly heard a growl that chilled her blood. Then the bed began to shake violently while the growling continued. That lasted for about 30 seconds, then ended abruptly. At this point, she turned on the lights, called us frantically, and dressed to leave immediately. She made arrangements to have the house blessed, but it turned out that such things sometimes have to be scheduled several weeks in advance, much to my surprise. During the waiting period, a local ghost hunting group heard about the house and asked to do an investigation. Seeing as how she didn't have any other means of addressing the problem, she agreed. The group did a 6-hour walk through investigation, followed by another 6 where the recorders and cameras were left to run in the empty house. While they caught nothing on video and still cameras, the audio was described to me as one of the most chilling 12 hours of audio they'd ever experienced. They tallied no fewer than 5 different voices speaking during the entire length, the majority being female. There were a lot of unknown noises that they could not figure out a source, mainly in the vein of things being moved or bangs and crashes. The final voice was what they pegged as male, but even the lead investigator said he had never heard such a deep and terrifying male voice. While some of the female voices could be understood, the male voice was unintelligible and consisted of raspy words and growls. The final nail in the proverbial coffin on the audio occurred during the part where no one was in the house. At some time around 4 in the morning, madness seemed to have broken out in the place. For a stretch of about 10 minutes, 2 separate audio recorders captured what I will describe as a temper tantrum. The stretch began with the voices talking to each other in an agitated state. Then you hear loud footsteps going up the stairs, followed by a series of booms and crashes, as if someone was taking the house apart looking for something. Then it goes quiet for a moment. Then the female voices begin to murmur to each other. Suddenly there's a large explosion of sound as whatever went up the stair comes back down, even louder than before. The female voices totally cease, and a very distinct growling can be heard. Then there's a very loud crash, which seemed to have been in the table where the recorder was placed, since you can hear the recorder bouncing on the wood. Then the sequence ends with the basement door being opened violently and what sounds like something scuttling down the stairs. Not human footsteps, but something going on more than 2 legs. Then everything stopped, and the house is silent until the team returned and turned off the equipment. Needless to say, my sister went to her church and told them about this. The house blessing / cleansing was done within days. Long story short, they had to do it twice. As the priest said, he still felt the presence fighting back as he was blessing the house during round 1. The second time seemed effective, and the house was quiet for a couple of months. Then the process began again. This time my sister opted to move out instead of going through the whole thing again. She also suspected that a roommate might have been dabbling in something dark and might have been actively calling it back.